Welcome to So and So, brought to you by Bernina, Made to Create. I'm Meg Goodman, and you're about to enjoy a casual conversation with a special member of the Soist community. A conversation about how they got started, what inspires them, what excites them, and their connection to this community. Our guest today is Gail Yellen, an accomplished and nationally known sewist and founder of Gail Patrice Design. She started her career with a BA in English and a degree in dental hygiene and worked in the same dental office from the time she graduated for the next 20 years. This, by the way, is where she met her husband when he had an emergency while in Connecticut and he lived in New York at the time. As she finished her dental hygiene career, Gail started taking classes at the Manchester Sewing Machine Center in Connecticut. After one class, she was hooked, but it was then that she realized she didn't know how to sew. Gail is an active member of the American Sewing Guild Connecticut chapter and moderated the Manchester Neighborhood Group's activities for more than 10 years. Designing patterns for beautiful clothes and bags has become the heart of Gail Patrice Design, and sharing her love of sewing and serging has become the soul. Hi, Gail, and welcome to So and So.
Hi, Meg, and thank you for inviting me. This is delightful.
Oh, we have a lot of questions for you today, and I want to jump right into this. Now, you talk about your grandmother's treadle sewing machine being the earliest memory you have of needle and thread. The last thing she ever sewed was a blue dress with a white collar and wide sashes for a bow in the back. That's a good memory. You wore this dress on your first day of kindergarten and would have worn it every day if you were allowed to. And you believe that this memory may be what first drew you to sewing. What was it about that dress that made you want to wear it all the time?
Well, I think I was very excited about being old enough to go to school. And because my grandmother made me a special dress for the first day of school, it just always stuck in my mind. And I just had a very special feeling about it. And also, I think one of the biggest reasons that I was so attached to it was because I remembered my grandmother saying, "This is the last dress I'm going to make." And so I felt like I was very special because of that, and that it was mine. And I still wish I had it, but being one of six kids, space was always a problem for storage. So it went the way of who knows where.
was it the last dress she made?
Yes, it was.
Yep. It was.
And I remembered my mother talking about how when she was growing up, my grandmother would make all sorts of different things for kids in the neighborhood for dress up and for play. And she used to make something that she called nature slippers, which I kind of think might be something along the line of like little felt elf shoes or something like that. I'm not really sure. And I remember my mother saying she would have the kids come over to the house and trace their feet on newspaper and then make a pattern from that. And I just thought that was such a cool thing that she could do that. And, you know, it just always stayed with me. And my father's mother did beautiful handwork. She did beautiful needlepoint and she crocheted. In fact, on my parents' bed, they had a hand crocheted bedspread that she made. And so I think I inherited those genes, and I seem to be the only one in the family who did.
Well, then you got all the good sewing genes.
I was really very, very fortunate. I always say my athletic skill ends right at my wrist. But I do have good fine motor skills, which I think is why I like to do dental hygiene. And I've always liked sewing and fussy little hand techniques and things a lot of people don't enjoy. I really like it. I find it relaxing.
Sure. How did you initially learn to sew?
I remember my grandmother gave my mother her treadle machine, and my mother would let me sit there and treadle back and forth. And of course, probably at that age, I was really, really young. I probably barely could even touch the treadle with my feet because I was short. And but I always thought it was very cool that that would make the needle go up and down. And so, of course, there was no thread in it when I was doing this because I wasn't really sewing. It was just having fun with the treadle. But I distinctly remember the man from the store where my mother bought the machine. And it must have been a sewing machine center because he came out to the house and sat at the kitchen table with my mother and showed her how to set up the machine, how to thread it and do all of these different things. And so I was just always drawn to that sort of thing. I would watch when my mother sewed things, and she used it mainly for mending or making curtains, or she did a few different little garments. I remember she made some dresses for my younger sister and things like that, but she really didn't have a lot of time to be creative. She was busy taking care of six kids. So, but it just was always something that fascinated me. And so as I got a little bit older and into junior high school, when we took our quote unquote homemaking classes, I did learn some things in sewing, but actually it kind of made me hate sewing at that point because it took a whole semester to make an apron. And that just, you know, you'd go to the class, you'd unpack your things, you'd get the machine threaded and set up and sew for 5 minutes, then it would be time to pack everything back up so it would be ready for the next class and that you could get out and get to class on time. But I did learn a little bit then. But then once I got into high school, I started to like sewing a little bit more, but I really, I knew nothing technically, zero. So it was just one of those things where I sewed things together, nothing fell apart and none of the seams split open. But looking back on it, you know, obviously the expertise was definitely lacking.
What was the first thing you ever made?
Well, I think probably that apron. And I still remember what the fabric looked like. It had, it was a black and white. It had print, like newsprint on it. And it had big red apples in a border print at the bottom, and it was cute. But that's the first thing I remember. But I didn't sew for a number of years after I got out of college. And I had a blouse that I bought, and it was really pretty. And at that time, it was pretty expensive for my budget. But it was this very pretty linen blouse that had a big, long portrait collar. And I wanted to wear it with a black jumper, but I needed something with a very deep V so that the collar would sit flat and wouldn't get bunched up. And I couldn't find one in the stores. And I said, I know there are patterns like that. So I went to the fabric store and looked, and sure enough, I found one. And I bought some black cotton velveteen, and it had a little drop waist on it, and it was just a cute, simple pattern, but it was perfect for that blouse. And when I was making it, I was thinking, wow, I forgot how much fun sewing is and how much I liked it. And do you know, I still have that jumper in my closet because it reminds me of why I got back into sewing and how much I loved it. And it always... it's kind of a touchstone for me. And I say to people, don't throw away the things that you first started making. Because I hear people when I teach classes say, oh, I've really got to get rid of some of the first things I made. They're just so horrible. And I said, no, no, no. I said, because it's a really good way to measure how far you've come. And again, on that jumper, I wore it a lot of different times. I haven't worn it probably in at least 30 years, but I still have it in the closet because it is that thing that really got me back into sewing.
You know, not only does it show progress, but there's some emotion and story to these pieces too.
There is, definitely. But I do think that sometimes people forget, and I think particularly women are hard on themselves about learning things and being critical of technique or whatever. And so I always say, you know, go back to looking at some of those things and even things that you made the year before. You're going to see so much growth and progress in what you've learned just by looking back at that and then looking at something that you made yesterday. And I think that it gives you a big sense of accomplishment. And it's really a concrete way of measuring what you know and what you've learned.
Gail, you shared with us just a moment ago that you realized when you took your first class, you really didn't know how to sew. And you said nothing fell apart, but you didn't know technical things and you still used a needle until it bent or broke. But it was also when you were taking these classes that you began to see sewing as an art form, not just a utilitarian endeavor. Tell us more about this.
Well, it's really interesting because I have thought that, you know, there are some people who do have a day that they can point to in their lives that is that transformative day in their life. And the day that I took my first formal sewing class, which was on a Saturday, it was an all-day class, that was it for me. And honestly, it was as if somebody pulled back the curtain on a whole new world. Mm-hmm. And I don't say it to be dramatic, but it really is the truth. And it was just, I just couldn't believe all of the things that you could do. And I had just bought a new machine. I had bought a machine when I graduated from college for myself. And it was a nice machine at the time, but again, it wasn't anything super fancy or expensive. But I had had that for about 20 years, and I thought, well, maybe it's time to get a new machine and see what's out there. And I decided that I would go over, and at the time, I didn't even know that they had machines that did embroidery. And it was just, I couldn't believe it. Well, I didn't think that I needed something like that because I was so far away from being able to master anything like that. But I did buy a nice little mid-range machine, and it had a lot of built-in decorative stitches and, I don't know, probably about 50 stitches. And that's when I decided to take that class. And I found out that there were all these techniques that you could do on a home sewing machine, because I used to see these things on ready-to-wear clothes or home deck items or whatever and think, oh, you must have to have some fancy industrial machine to do them. And that wasn't the case. It was just a matter of knowing what stitch to select, how to fine-tune the settings on your machine, and away you could go. And it was... It really was a transformative day. I just really got into it, and I loved it. And I remember going over the Athenaeum in Hartford. I think it's the longest running museum in the United States. Had a quilt exhibit, and my husband and I were members, and we brought my mother over to see it, and we were sitting, and my younger sister also, who's also quite entertaining, and. We went to the opening night of that, and they had a slideshow and a speaker from one of the universities in California, or one of the museums, I think it was. And she had slides, and I remember her talking about this one quilt and saying that it had 35,000 different pieces in it.
Oh, my.
and my sister leaned over and said, "Do you suppose the person who made that did that before or after she was committed?" But when we saw the quilt exhibit, it really, and in an art museum, not like a sewing store or something like that, it really cemented the idea that sewing could be an art form, just like sculpting or painting or anything else. It's just that you're working with needle and thread and fabric, not paint or not clay or marble or whatever.
And all you had to do was be given the opportunity to sew for more than just 5 minutes, and you realized sewing was fun.
I loved it.
Gail, as you were learning to sew and you were working in the sewing machine center, the other customers and the store staff were very inspiring to you. In fact, you were there so much that they asked you to join the store staff. So working a few hours a week gave you a chance to learn about sewing from the business side. Talk about the inspiration that you got and what you learned about the business side of sewing.
Well, when I started doing that, as I say, being very new, I didn't even know there was such a thing as the sewing world, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. And so, again, that was all part of that pulling back the curtain and seeing this whole new world. But when I saw it, and I didn't know a lot of people at the time who did any kind of fancy. I don't think I knew anybody who did any kind of fancy sewing or very sophisticated types of work. But when I started taking classes and people would bring things in that they were working on, and they were customers, not employees, and I could see the level that they were working on. And I was like, oh my goodness, you know, this is incredible. And actually, as I say, I bought that mid-range machine. And then in less than a year, I decided I really couldn't live without an embroidery machine after I saw all of the things that other people did. And we had an amazing community of sewers at the store, and 99% of them were women, but we did have a couple of men who were also very talented sewers too, but the majority were women. And you know, they would just bring things in, and we offered classes in all types of sewing. We did garments, quilts, home deck, just fun things that in the summer they had a camp for kids to take classes, and just all of those different things made it really fun to see how classes were set up, how they prepared for them, how you put a kit together. It was a learning lab for me, and it was a very good one because we had some very good people in there who were very organized and very good about showing how to do things and how to put things together. And I can remember the first time I taught a class, it was interesting because at the end of the class, I remember sitting at the table and writing down all the things that I needed to remember to say from now on in a class, and things that I just kind of assumed people knew, but obviously didn't. And it was a wonderful, wonderful place. And we had such great customers, and the gentleman who owned the store was Aaron Cheerman. He's deceased now, and he was the loveliest man. And we had people come from New York, Massachusetts, New Hampshire. We had people come from all over the place for classes and special events. And we had national educators come in, which to me was amazing. And the whole atmosphere there was just so wonderful. And, but then he sold, his health started kind of declining, and he sold the business. And unfortunately, then it was like a storm of different things coming together where the economy kind of tanked for a while, and the new owner just couldn't sustain the business economically. So it closed, but it was just a wonderful experience, and I was very fortunate to be part of it.
You know, that's the community that we talk about on So and So, how sewing is so much more than just using a machine or techniques. It's the people, it's the learning, it's the community that you talk about.
It really is. And in fact, I've taught at a number of American Sewing Guild national conferences, and I've taught all around the country at the various chapters. Not every single one, obviously, but quite a few of them. And so when we've done the national conference, it's like a big reunion of all these people from all over the country that I've met. And, you know, sometimes they would come over to the booth and just to say hello and how are you? And it's an amazing community. It really is. It's terrific.
And may everyone be able to get together again soon.
I think we're on the precipice of being able to do that, which is a wonderful thing.
Gail, when you talk about your classes and things, you say that experimenting with all types of embellishment techniques is a favorite pastime of yours, and teaching classes and workshops, you do Facebook Live, you do several things, and the ability to interact with all levels of sewing enthusiasts continues to be a source of inspiration and fun for you. So talk to us a little bit about these embellishment techniques and the inspiration that you get from teaching.
I do love to experiment and do embellishing. And, you know, a lot of times people will say, oh, you know, how did you get that window? Like I had this window technique that's basically a faced opening in a piece of fabric that you could put, say, a reverse applique in back of, or I've also done things with charms or beads and decorative things or buttons that I've suspended in these windows. And I can remember I had this grand idea, and a lot of times things would come to me right before I'd fall asleep, and I'd jump out of bed and turn on the light and write them down and draw them out. And when I first had this idea about doing this windows technique, I drew it out and it just looked so cute on paper. Mm-hmm. And I and we know how that goes sometimes, but
we do.
Yes. And I was trying it out that next day, and the way I was doing it at that time, the fabric looked like it was wounded with Band-Aids all over it. And my husband came home from work, and he said, well, what's the matter? Because I was quite downcast because, you know, I went from thinking this is going to be the next great thing to it's a mess. And I said, oh, I just had this great idea, and I thought it was going to be so cute. And so, and I said, and it's not. And he said, well, rethink it and rework it. He said, if you think it's going to be really good, think about how you can do it differently. And that was, I was so glad he said that, because I would have probably just thrown in the towel and forgotten about it. So I did start thinking about it, and I thought, well, I don't have to bring the facing or the, I was doing it with the fusible interfacing. And I thought, well, I can make it look much cleaner by bringing it to the wrong side of the fabric. And that was the start of doing the windows technique. And then it was kind of a jumping off point for, as I said, suspending buttons or charms or beads or whatever in the windows. And people really responded to that and liked it. And it kind of took off from there. And then needle felting got to be very popular. And I went crazy with that for a while. I loved needle felting. It was really fun. But, it was, I can remember doing an expo, and I don't know whether I was in Ohio or Illinois, and I had a jacket that had that window tech. There were three windows on it. One was a window that was just plain. One had a reverse applique in back of it, and another one had a charm suspended in it. And I remember a woman coming into the class saying, that's the only thing I came to this expo to learn. Mm-hmm. And she was so excited about learning it. And when she realized it really wasn't hard to do, she was so thrilled. And the next day she came back with a whole project that she did around that whole thing. She must have stayed up all night. But it just made me feel so happy that she felt much more empowered and excited, and it got her going with sewing and doing all these fun different techniques. And you know, somebody's always thinking up something new and different, and sometimes you think, where do they come up with these ideas? And but you know, they just kind of come to you. And sometimes just looking through photographs or magazines and things like that, it's a good jumping off spot for inspiration.
Do you have any specific memory of an inspiration that happened while you were teaching a class?
I have had, sometimes people have asked me questions about, can I do this or can I do that? And it might be something that I haven't tried before. And I will always say to them, you know, you might have just thought up the next great thing to try out. And I said, you know, so go home and try it out. I'm trying to think of, I probably have, but off the top of my head, let me think about that for a while.
Okay, well, we'll come back to that while we start to talk about sergers, which can be intimidating for people. But they fascinated you once you learned about how each component worked and affected a stitch. And then you realized, here's some inspiration, that if other sewists also understood this machine better, they'd love it as much as you do and really have fun with it. What is it that people need to understand about sergers so they aren't intimidated by them?
I know, as I said, when I first started taking classes over at the store, and I would see people come in with their sergers for a class, and I'd see those four cones of thread on top of it, and I would think, oh, I don't think I could ever master that machine. It looks way too complicated for me. But then the more I started thinking about it, and I knew more and more people who were buying sergers, I thought, well, you know, they are made for the home sewing market, and so they can't be impossible to learn. And I actually ran into a woman at a fabric store who was a patient of mine. And this is after I stopped working in the dental office, but I ran into her and I knew she had a serger. So we started chatting and I said, well, how hard is it to learn? She said, well, it's definitely a learning curve, but she said, you know, you kind of learn step by step. And so I just kind of made up my mind that I wanted to learn that machine. So I went over to the store as a customer and I just had in mind that I would buy a mid-range serger for my first one. I said, you know, I'll see how I do and if I like it and if I can master it. But I've always had a thing about, you know, you always want to look at something that's more money than you planned on spending just to see what extra features it has. Because buying a sewing machine or a serger is kind of like buying a car. The more you want to spend, the more bells and whistles you get.
Oh, sure.
And so I went in and I said, you know, I'm just looking at a mid-range model. I've never owned one. I've never touched one or used one. And so they did. They showed me a mid-range one. And then I said, well, what does a top-of-the-line serger do that this one won't? So she moved me down a couple of notches on the counter and showed me that one. And that one happened to have auto tensions settings and things like that. And it was a combo machine that had a cover stitch and overlock function. And I said, well, now I don't want the other one. I want this one.
Funny how that happens.
Yes, it is. That suddenly you decide you can't live without those functions anymore, even though you don't know how to use any of them. But I did that and I brought it home, and my husband happened to have a conference, I think, in Arizona where he was going to be gone for 4 or 5 days, and it was over a weekend. And I was like, oh, perfect timing. I can just sit in my pajamas and I don't have to make meals or anything else. And I can just play from morning till night. And I did. That's exactly what I did. But I got the machine to go, and I got very confident by Sunday night, and I cut all the, I hadn't cut on any of the threads naturally, and it was set up for a 4-thread overlock. And so I thought, oh, I think I've got this conquered. And I cut all of the threads and I tried to rethread it and I couldn't get it to stitch. So I had to kind of go back to square one on Monday morning and call the store and say, can I come over and have you show me again what I'm doing wrong? But you know, little by little, kind of things sunk in. Because when I'd say, you know, what's wrong with this stitch? It doesn't look quite right. And they go, oh, that's your upper looper. And I think, you know, how do they know what thread is what? So I really started making a point of figuring out exactly how they knew which was which. And that was the moment that I realized, it's just a matter of understanding the components of the machine, the stitch, and that's when you can really manipulate things and have fun with it. Because if you don't understand the machine or what you're looking at on a stitch, then you really kind of feel limited by instructions in a pattern or something like that. And when you really shouldn't have to. And last summer, actually, I taught it was a virtual class. It was for a store out in Arizona. And it was one of the most rewarding things I've heard, that at the end of the class, one of the women in it said, you know, now I know what I'm doing when I turn all those knobs and dials. She said, I always used to do it according to what the instructions said or what the instructor told us to do. But she said, I never knew what I was doing. She goes, now I can do that and I can really have fun with my machine. And that has always been my philosophy, is that once you understand it, then you're not afraid to turn the knobs and dials.
So what are some of the other components that can affect a stitch?
Well, actually, every single thing on it, your needle position in overlock mode can affect the width of the stitch as it can for a cover stitch as well. Your tension settings, the type of thread that you're using, a differential feed is also, I think, one of the best features on a serger. But again, understanding how differential feed works is, it's not hard, but once you do understand it, then you can really sew knits fearlessly and use it for decorative techniques as well. And, you know, again, a lot of people shy away from working with knits because they don't understand how to work the differential feed. But once they understand how it does change the fabric as it's going through, it's kind of an eye-opener, and it opens a lot more new possibilities. So stitch width, there you can always adjust stitch width only by taking, you know, one needle out. If you take your left needle out, you've automatically narrowed down your stitch by about 2 to 2.5 millimeters. You can change where the stitch finger is, how far away it is from the needles. And again, I've really thought out my explanation when I do classes in person or virtually also. But if you can kind of break it down into a nuts and bolts type of thing and not keep it this very high level, mysterious type of thing, mm-hmm. and just say to people, you know, the distance between the needle and the loopers and how far away the stitch finger is from the needles, all of those affect stitch width. And, you know, when you turn the knobs and dials, that's when you can make those adjustments and you can fine tune the stitch to within a fraction of a millimeter of how you want it to look. And it isn't hard to understand once you do that. But, you know, people sometimes feel like, oh, if I touch anything, the machine's going to explode, which of course it isn't. So
you've never seen that happen.
Not yet. There's always a first time though, Meg. But yeah.
Gail, let's talk about decorative threads, which you feel very strongly is an expanding market and it makes the possibilities endless. Tell us more about this.
That's one of the great things about sergers is that they can utilize decorative threads much more so than a sewing machine can. You can only go to and use a certain number of decorative threads in a sewing machine, unless you're doing something like bobbin work, but not too many people do a lot of bobbin work. But the number of and types of decorative threads that you can use on a serger is much broader than on a sewing machine. And I love seeing what they can do. And sometimes just chaining off with decorative threads in the loopers can create beautiful trims. And in fact, on my YouTube channel, I did a little piece on doing a Christmas ball and I used decorative serger chains on that. And then around Easter time, I did some Easter eggs with that. And it was really kind of fun, but you can use that. And I just received last week. I just got the carton in the mail from Wonderfill Threads, and they started doing an offer with what they called the Artist Palette Packs, where people could select their own type of thread and the colors and everything. And so I have two different selections. One is called Bayside Blooms, and the other one is called Paint Box. And the Paint Box one has 10 kind of bright and bold colors of their spaghetti thread, which is a 12-weight cotton thread. And I use that frequently in kits when people are bringing their own sergers because it works well in almost every make and model serger. And then the other one, which is Bayside Blooms, are more on the pastel, softer side. But again, it's the 12-weight spaghetti thread. But their threads, I love. There are a lot of good, wonderful threads on the market from different brands. But what you can do with them on a serger is amazing, and it can totally change the look of a stitch. You know, it can go from just being a plain old 3-thread wide overlock to a beautiful finish on, say, a table runner or a placemat or even a garment edge.
Gail, I want to talk about your business, Gail Patrice Design. And in the intro to this the show, I quoted you in saying that designing patterns for beautiful clothes and bags has become the heart of Gail Patrice design, and sharing your love of sewing and serging has become the soul. What does this mean?
Well, recently I've been kind of gearing my pattern development toward teaching serger techniques, and I've been doing some bags, a placemat, I did a table runner. And again, it's, you know, I just love seeing people succeed with different techniques and different patterns. And so I've tried to design things that are good not only for sophisticated, very knowledgeable sewers, but also things that will grow and expand a newer person's skill level and be doable for them as well, with some instruction. And it stretches them and allows them to be very creative. And one thing that I found when I first started teaching was that all you had to do was say to people sometimes that, wow, you did a really good job on that stitch. Look at how beautiful that edge came out. And they would just light up. I think it just meant the world to them. And it was always sincere. I would, if something didn't look good, I wouldn't obviously give false praise. But, you know, I realized that all of these different things as a creative outlet, or even just for utility purposes, by helping people strengthen their skill level and ability to do different things was really fun. And it could be through garment sewing or making bags or whatever. And then they could tailor to their lifestyle or however they wanted to use their sewing skills. But it's just been a really fun, rewarding thing for me to do and to build the business on.
Gail, you've accomplished so much. You've shared so much with so many people. What's next for you?
Well, I'm continuing to teach. And at the beginning of the talk, I said, I think we're on the precipice of being able to open up and do things again. So I am starting to book in-person events for this year, for the end of the year closer. I think I have one or two things in the late summer, but that is going to be big. And I think just continuing my YouTube channel, I've been growing with more and more serger tip clips on it. And I get great response on that, which makes it really fun. They're just quick videos. So I'm hoping to do a few more things like sew-alongs and virtual classes on that to continue. Because one thing about the pandemic that's been interesting is that it's been very kind to the sewing world. Sewing has exploded. Mm-hmm. And even though it's not the same experience as doing an in-person class, the virtual classes have really made it possible for a lot of people who might not be able to go to an expo or take a class in person, whether it's because they don't drive anymore or they would have to take a hotel and they can't spend that amount of money, whatever, but they can do it from the comfort of their own home. It's really expanded the sewing world very nicely and opened up new avenues for all people who are in the sewing industry. And so I hope to continue with that because I have heard from a lot of people who said, oh, I've never been able to take a class of yours before in person, and doing it virtually made it possible. So I think I will try to continue with that and expand my video library for people to keep learning. And some of it will be paid content and some of it, most of it right now is free.
And free is good.
Free is good. And there are a lot of great YouTubers out there and people who do things, you know, free of charge. Of course, there is no jury when it comes to what goes on YouTube or not. So you kind of have to pick and choose what you watch as far as value for information. But I've really loved it. And I've been enjoying that. And when I did my Craftsy class, the first Craftsy class I did was, I think, 2013. And that grew my audience really around the world. And then I did a cover stitch workshop for them as well. And that was really fun. But that's also been something that has helped get me name and face recognition.
We've talked about so much today. Is there any question I didn't ask you that you wish I had?
I think you've covered the landscape pretty well, Meg. I think you did a great job with picking and choosing what you're doing. But I do think that sewing has been I think it's very therapeutic for people. And I think that's part of the reason that it's grown so much during the pandemic, where people were kind of hunkering down in their houses and really more isolated. And it's interesting because I've talked to so many people in the sewing world who said, you know, it really hasn't been bad for me. And I can honestly say the same thing. I do miss doing the in-person events, but it's really been kind of nice in that I've had more time at home to do sewing and little fun projects that I might not have been able to do when I'm packing up and jumping out of bed at 3 a.m. to catch a 6 a.m. flight.
Sure.
But in that way, it's been wonderful for the sewing world. And I've heard that from a lot of people. And I just think the therapeutic value of anything that's a process, like whether you like to cook or garden or sew or knit, whatever, I think it's been wonderful for people's mental health. And I use it for my own too, like whenever something's bothering me and I've got some kind of a dilemma that I have to figure out, a lot of times I'll head for my sewing studio and immerse myself in a project, and it just kind of relaxes me. And a lot of times I can arrive at a solution to whatever was bothering me to begin with.
Gail, this has been a wonderful conversation, and I want to thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. I'm sure our listeners would like to reach out to you. So what's the best way for them to do so?
They can do that. They can email me. My email is gail@gailpatrice.com. Or if they watch any of my YouTube videos and they have a question, I always get back to people pretty quickly. And especially now that we are home, I usually can answer them within a few hours of when they ask a question. And they can just type that down in the comments or the chat area on that. But they can also visit my website, which is gailpatrice.com. And they can make comments through that as well, and they can see my different products and, go from there. But any way of those is a great way to get in touch with me.
That's great. And there will be pictures of Gail and some of her creations on the soandsopodcast.com website. Gail, thank you again for joining us today on So and So.
Well, thank you very much. It's really been fun, and I appreciate the chance to talk to you.
Bernina has a very special way to say thank you for taking the time to join us and listen to Gail's story of inspiration. If you're thinking of a new Bernina, go to shop.berninausa.com/Gail to download a mail-in voucher for up to $100 in a rebate check mailed directly to you. Just purchase a new Bernina machine in the next 30 days, complete the voucher, and send a copy of your receipt to get up to a $100 rebate. For complete details, visit shop.berninausa.com/Gail. Well, there you have it. Another story about someone just like you. Someone for whom sewing is so much more than a hobby. It's a way of life. It's a connection to something bigger. If you know someone you think has an outstanding story, a story that should be shared on this podcast, please drop me a note to megoodman@theflintrock.com and put "you should hear their story" in the subject line. I also want to thank Bernina for making this program possible. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform and visit our website, soandsopodcast.com, for more information about today's and all of our guests. That's SEWANDSOpodcast.com. I'm Meg Goodman, and I look forward to you joining us next time on So and So.